Well, thank you, Roger. I appreciate it. And I can see that I'm getting the same haircut you have coming up pretty soon. Looks like it's rushing right down the road. So anyway, it's good to be here, and it's great to be in Southern California. I was raised here in Long Beach and Lakewood, so I know when I see all the things that are going on back here. I'm in Colorado Springs now. So, gosh, just a week ago, I think it was 20 below zero. And my wife and I are trying to figure out what are we doing there at our age. So I'm 73, she's 74, and we're in a very great time in our life because I don't have a staff anymore, and so we don't have any responsibilities of people's lives in that sense, but they all have great jobs that left. We closed our office a year and a half ago. So anyway, a lot of things have happened to me in the last several years. Just when the 2000s started, I had a heart attack. And since it's passed, I got a chance to look it over and see what was going on. But I tried to give my ministry away to my three children and their mates. And I did that at the end of the 90s. And I made it official, signed the papers. My wife said, I don't know if this is a good idea. Oh, it's a great idea. My kids all love each other. We're a great family. We all love each other. It'll be wonderful. It wasn't. And it was horrible. And the problem was is that they all are very strong, committed to Christ and committed to ministry, committed to helping marriages and families in one way or another. And so they all had their own individual ideas what direction this ministry ought to go. And I have 10% of the ministry. And so I thought I'll go to all the board meetings and so on and so forth, because I didn't actually the chairman of the board. Greg, my middle child, the psychologist one, is serious, more serious than the others. And anyway, he was elected as president of this organization. And then they began to pick him apart. And so, but here's the problem. The problem was is that they all wanted to go in a different direction. And that's very normal, great, love them for it. But it didn't work very long, and so they all went their different ways. And there was a little bit of friction and a little bit of disharmony. And that at first, and then we all forgave each other and back into harmony. Now we're all fine again. And they all have their own thing. Greg is the vice president at Focus on the Family, in charge of marriage and parenting. And then he has his own live daily 1-hour talk show from that organization. And then my youngest son is 40 years old. He has an organization called ER for Love. And it's the byline is save your marriage in 2 days, which they do. And I see it all the time. I took a couple of them with them just to see what they were doing. And I was blown away with their... They took Greg's research that he did with 17 psychologists and therapists and so on back in the 90s. They spent 10 years bringing 5 couples at a time into the marriage intensive program in Branson, Missouri. It's now called NIM. And so anyway, I watched these couples come in hating each other on Monday, and by Thursday they were hugging and holding hands, and I saw these miracles week after week after week. And so I asked him one day, what in the world do you do? What are you doing? He wouldn't share it initially. And so, but then he started mentoring me. And so, I asked him to do that, and I started learning a ton of great stuff. And so I've been able to put it to practice and live it in my own life and so on and so forth. But what I realize is that, incidentally, in the heart attack, I had a heart attack, 12, 13 years ago. And I was turkey hunting for the first time in my life. And my good friend in Branson, Missouri, is a hunter kind of a person. Looks like Duck Dynasty. Kind of a guy. And so I never would go with him, but I finally said, okay, because he was on my case all the time. And I went with him. And so I I just finished a conference with Jim Dobson, and so we were trekking out in the woods at 5 in the morning, and then it got 6 and then 7. And so we were quite a ways away from the truck, and he has all these calls he does. And I was fascinated by the whole thing. I had camouflage on me, you know, camouflage clothes. And I'd never turkey hunted in my life. And so anyway, he was calling turkeys continually with different things. And finally, we climb up this hill. And I couldn't breathe when I got up to the top of the hill. And so he says, "Hey, shh." He said, "You're going to scare the turkeys." And I said, I don't know what's going on. You know, he says, "Just relax, calm down. It's exciting, but it's not that exciting." And so he thought I was just really excited about turkey hunting, and I didn't know what was happening to me. And so then it shows up about the distance to the back of this church. And so he says, "There it is." And so he whispers to me, and he says, "Stop the breathing so loud." I can't get any air at all. And so he says, "When he goes behind a tree, then I'll give you the gun. And then when he comes behind, out from the tree, then you shoot." I didn't have any strength. I couldn't get any air. And so I couldn't even lift the gun up, but I got it right here. And when it came out of the tree, he didn't say anything about the shot or what it does to you and all this stuff. But it's a huge blast. And so I shoot in the general direction from my hip, and knocks me over. And I guess the shell is unique. And anyway, one shot. And so he runs, gets it, brings it back, and I'm on the ground, breathing. I can't breathe. And he says, "You got a trophy turkey." You know, I said, "Great." I says, "But I can't look right now because I think I'm having a heart attack." And so he says, "Woo." So he takes the gun. And I can't get up, so I'm on my back, and I'm lying there, and he runs to get, he's a fifth degree black belt. I didn't even know that. That was good to know. And so anyway, he runs and gets the truck and comes back, but it was a long time. And so I knew what was going on. My dad died this way at 58. Both my brothers died this way. My one brother died at 51, and I was 62 at this time. So I'm dying in the woods, can't get any air. And the amazing thing happened to me. And I don't know if this is normal or not normal, or if this is what happens to people like this. I don't know. But while I was lying there dying, I said to God, "Thank you for life. Thank you for my wife and my kids and grandkids." And I said, "I'll see you in a minute." I was totally relaxed. And I was ready to go. And this, like, invisible cloud. I didn't have any, like, lights flashing, and I didn't go to heaven for a while to come back and tell you what it was like to be in heaven. But this cloud, invisible thing, kind of like a mist or whatever it was, just settled over me. I could feel it. I'm on the ground, so it just settled over me, went all the way to the ground. And I went, "Whoa, that's really weird." And I said, "That must be what you feel just before you die." So after a little while, I said, "Okay, I'm ready to go. You know, take me." And he didn't. And so whatever that was, I don't know for sure what it was. It was God's spirit or whatever. I'm not sure. But anyway, I didn't die. And so he gets back, picks me up because I can't walk, carries me out of the woods, over fences and stuff, and gets me in the car. And I'm married to a woman who's just the opposite of me. And so in September, it'll be 50 years. And so I just say 50, you know, we're close. And so I get in the back seat of the pickup, I'm laying down. And so as soon as we get into cell phone range, because we had lost that, I called. And I said, "Hon." And so that's about all I could get out. And she says, "Hold on, I got somebody in the office." So she puts me on hold. Music is playing. I'm thinking, I wanted to just tell her one last time, you know, that I loved her, but I'll wait. And I did. I waited. And she finally came back on the phone. I said, "Hey," I said, "I'm having a heart attack." She goes, "Who?" You know, so, and so, what, how can I remember all the details of it? But anyway, we hung up, and then she called to find out where I was going to go, and a helicopter eventually, the paramedics show up, and I always thank those people wherever I, in whatever town, because they sprayed like aspirin in my mouth or something and a bunch of other things and did some things. But by the time I got to the hospital, I was shaking out of control and still couldn't breathe, because gasping for air. And there she is with my son Greg, and in the hall. And so they're wheeling me down the hall really fast to get me into the operating room, and she's hanging on to the side. And so I'm trying to tell her, you know, that I love her and Greg, and they said, hey, Dave, don't save your breath, you know, and we know you love us. And so here's my wife. She's hanging on. She gets down into my face. She says, you listen to me. She said, you are not dying, and you are not leaving me with this mess. It was the mess of my kids, you know, trying to, and it was huge, huge stress on me. And so I didn't know that had anything to do with any of this stuff, but anyway, but I can remember laughing inside thinking, that's so her. She's controlling me right down to the very last second. So, anyway, I didn't die, as you can tell, and they put stents and things, and so then a year later, I lost my kidneys, and I didn't realize it had anything to do with stress, which is really another word for anger, and I was angry. I had expectations that my kids were going to do great at this new thing, and they weren't, and they weren't getting along, and the spouses, you know. It's just, you know what families are like. When they get into disharmony, it can be really messy. And so, and your church is, I mean, if you're involved in a church, how many of you are actually involved in the local church then? All of you? Yeah, good. Okay, so some of you are pastors, some of you are youth pastors, some of you are whatever, okay? But you're involved in a church, and those people, and churches are filled with families. And sometimes those families are all together there with grandkids and stuff like that, and there's messes. So that's what I was involved in. And so when I lost my kidneys, that's probably the reason I'm cold all the time, because the kid anti-rejection things, whatever it is, I'm sure it's got to be something. Here I am in a sweater and shirt and two undershirts under this. California. Yeah. I'll be in the sun before long. But anyway, so... my youngest son, Michael, gave me his kidney. It's right here. And giant kidneys, largest kidney that was transplanted out of this group from USC for over 30 years. So it was working great, still working great. And so anyway, he reminds me from time to time that he gave me this kidney, you know, when he needs something, and I can't say no. I mean, how do you say no? So, and Greg didn't give me a kidney, and he's not a match. And so we took him out of the will, and he said he doesn't care because he could get more on for his kidney at eBay anyway. So so here we are, and gone through life in the ministry all these years, and so gone through the same kinds of things you go through. I'm going through one right now. A difficult situation. And I had a great time this morning praying about it, because the very things I'm sharing this morning for you, I want you to end well also. I want you to go into the pulpit on Sundays or into whatever you do in ministry fired up and excited about life, and it's okay in my mind for you to be worried any particular day, for you to be jealous, for you to be envious, for you to be stressed, angry, worried. I said that already. Your feelings get hurt when you're in ministry. I tell younger pastors that the best thing that can, the fastest growing person is a person who's working in a church, because churches just have their way of beating us up. And there are people that just have a thing on their forehead. You can read it sometimes. But they come up just to figure out ways to make you miserable. And they have a plan to do that. And so, and that's okay. I really accept it today because I know that everybody's flawed. You're flawed. There's not a person in here that's not flawed. And you got your immature areas and you've got your growth areas that you need. You're irritated. Who's irritated now and then just once in a while? Okay, let's see your hands. Okay. And who's frustrated at least daily? Okay, see, we're all frustrated. That's all anger. All various expressions of anger. And so what I'm continuing to learn, and I did it even this morning, and I love doing this because I went from starting to worry to joy in about 15 minutes. And it's based on this thing that I keep learning from God on these two words that are very, very important to me. And the first word is honor. And what I realized again this morning and what I realize every day is that honor is like the essence of my life. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love, preferring one another in honor. Romans 12, 9 and 10, I think. And I never quote the actual verse, but or the reference. But that verse is such a part of my life. And why did God send His Son here for us? Because we're very, very valuable to Him. We're His creation. We're special in so many ways. And so He values us. And then I realize that today, that the reason I'm able to love you, I don't even know a lot of you, but the reason I'm able to love you is because you're very valuable to me. I could be doing a lot of things in life, just like you could be doing. But I'd rather be here talking to you, hoping to encourage you far more than I would fishing out there in the, you know, the early in the morning where the waves are smaller, or going over to Catalina and laying on the beach or scuba diving over there. I love that. But you're so much more important than scuba diving and spearing those golden, what are they called? Those, yeah. I speared about five of them one time in Catalina and with my son. We didn't have a clue that they're the state fish or something or whatever. I brought them out on the bank and no one said a word to me. And so anyway, I don't do that anymore. But anyway, but you are so much more valuable to me because you're warm and breathing. I don't care what your past is. I don't care what size of a sinner you are. I don't care what you're struggling with. I just love you because you're very valuable to me. And watch how this works. If you value your mate or your congregation, and you might have to make a list of all their names so you can go through it from time to time. Depends on how big the church is. There's some that are like 5,000 people, and so it's going to be more difficult. But the more you value each person, the greater affection you have to people. So that when Jesus said, whatever you treasure, that's where your heart will be also. So that I treasure people because God treasures people and Jesus treasures people. And Jesus said, here is my command that you love one another as I have loved you. Why? Because you're very valuable to Jesus. And His Father sent Him here to tell us that. So that I used to run myself down when I was younger. I was a dumb kid in school and had no interest in school. I didn't value education at all. Therefore, I didn't have any feelings towards it. And I saw a t-shirt recently that I got to buy. In fact, when I mentioned to my kids, they all want it. It says, another day and I haven't used algebra. It's true. When's the last time I used algebra? I had to take all that stuff and minored in math in college and I haven't used any of it. The only thing I remember about calculus is the 1 over cabin is, the integral of 1 over cabin is log cabin. That's it. How practical is that to use in life? So anyway, so got to make sure I don't. Anyway, so the essence of my life today is honor. Honor me. This is a $200 million diamond ring that was given to me by a Saudi prince. And no, that's a lie. This is just a cheap glass thing. But you know what? I decided when I bought it, I'm going to say it's worth $200 million. Really? Yeah? It doesn't care how valuable it is. Some of the people you're with care how valuable they are, but you can choose how valuable they are. We have a choice. I can think valuable thoughts about people. And it affects my heart. Because whatever I treasure, that's where my heart will be also. If you start losing your affection and your motivation for the people in your church, because some of them are really going to drive you nuts anyway, right? If you lose your affection for those people that are really bugging you, I guarantee you, you're thinking dishonoring thoughts about them. Of all the churches in the world, I got stuck with this one. I got stuck with Mr. and Mrs. and, you know, this person and that. That's not good. You got to value people who you're... Tonight, for example, I'm going to talk to the singles in the church that's called the...
Rock Harbor.
Rock Harbor. Most speakers know where they're going to speak. My grandson would have been... you know where... I don't even know where it is. So, but they're valuable people there, I'll tell you that. And so... I don't have to know the name of it. So anyway, where was I? I had a really good point to make. What was it?
Singles.
Okay. Tonight I'm going to share two ways for them to become a magnet to their friends. A magnet. In other words, if they do these things, people will be attracted to them. And in some cases, they're going to have more friends than they want, need. But this is the point, but the major point is, after you make a friend, the very essence of keeping that friend is learning how to honor them, learning how to value them. So that there's one psychologist in the country who's 70% of his time with clients is spent, the very first session, he'll say to a couple, I just want you to go home for a week and make the longest list you can of why your mate is so valuable and why you married your mate. Just make it as long as you can. For me, I have 4 pages on my computer. It's a document. 4 pages, single spaced, of all the reasons why Norma is so valuable. And when I get really bugged with her, and it just like sometimes it just... You know, relationships just get unbearable at times because she has her own opinion about everything, and which is what she's supposed to have. I'm supposed to have. And yet we learned a communication method that I get to share Saturday morning that for us, I made it as simple as I can for us to apply. And it just is, I don't lose any arguments anymore. She doesn't lose them either. We actually help each other win all of our disagreements and arguments. And it's fun. And it's so hopeful because when we enter into our disagreement, we're not arguing anymore. We're just trying to understand each other and help each other win. And it's just a very simple love, L-O-V-E. It's called Love Talk. And we learned it from Scott Stanley and Howard Markman. And then I turned it into something that's so simple for me because of who I am. It has to be really simple if I'm going to get it. And so the essence is for you today to start making a list of why it's so valuable that you do what you do. And on that list, you can say that you are flawed and have some problems and still you're not perfect. No one's perfect here. Anybody perfect here? No one is. Okay. And so another major thing, and I'll get to all this stuff in a second, but another major thing is my son Greg taught me about, I don't know, 8, 10 years ago, whatever it was, to stop trying to change Norma. Because I thought she had a couple of areas in her life she should improve in. And I thought it for 38 years of our marriage. And she never really took it to heart. She never really like got excited about my, I thought were really good presentations of why she should change these 2 areas of her life. And she didn't. She wouldn't. And so they usually ended in arguments. And so I'm done with that. Done trying to change her. I'm working on one person in our marriage. Who is that? Me. Can you change your mate? My son kept saying, no, you cannot change your mate. He said, Dad, in fact, what you're really doing by trying to change Mom is that you are creating an unsafe environment for her. And whenever you create an unsafe environment, then she'll pull away from you because it's threatening. So, Dad, since my research has found that it doesn't work, you can't do it, and it makes your marriage worse, what do you say you try not changing Mom anymore? Just work on yourself. I said, well, it doesn't make sense to me. And somebody needs to help her in these 2 areas. And it won't be you because you're a big chicken. I know you won't do it. And so who's going to help her? He said, Dad, it's not your job. It's God's job, not yours. You're not the Holy Spirit here. And so I went, ugh. And so I said, okay, I'll try it. I'll just work on me. Tell me what I need to do for me. How do I do this? And he began to tell me that you change your thinking because your thinking is the essence of who you become eventually. And he said, my advice to you is start memorizing certain scripture verses that really impact you. And I did. I started it. And 4 years after I started working on my own top 100 scripture verses and started memorizing them and learning how to meditate on them day and night, she called me one day around noon or before noon and on a cell phone, and she says, what are you doing? What are you doing for lunch? And I said, nothing. She said, you want to join me? And so when we lived in Branson, Missouri, and there's a brand new kind of an outdoor mall down there by the river and stuff. And she said, you want to join me at the landing and have lunch? I said, yeah, I'll do that. And she says, bring your tennis shoes along because we're going to walk before we eat. And I said, we're going to walk? And I said, what do you mean? She says, I've been exercising every day. I haven't told you. This is one of those things I've tried to change. And but I haven't told you because I knew if I told you, you'd say, well, what kind of shoes are you wearing and how are you stretching and, you know, and all that stuff. She says, so I knew you'd want to get involved. And so she says, I haven't told you, but come on. I'm doing it every day. I said, I'll do it. So I went down and I met her and we started off, and she was pretty fast, which surprised me. And I said, how far are we walking? She said, see that bridge way down there? She said, we're going to walk to that and then come back and then eat one of these places here. And I said, great. And then we got going about 2 or 3 minutes, and she stops and goes, ooh. She grabs her left knee and she went, ooh, my knee is killing me today. Because she has like bone on bone on her left knee. She was in a major auto accident in Whittier. When she was in high school, almost died. 2 of her friends died in the car accident. It was a convertible up in the hills of Whittier. The kid was 16 years old, and the brakes went out. And so he didn't know how to, you know, go against the bank. So he went off a cliff, and she lived. But 2 or 3 of the kids died. But anyway, she's got arthritis in that leg now because of the big cut on it and stuff. And so anyway, she, ooh, ooh. She says, my knee is killing me. And I said, let's stop. We can rest over here on this bench. We don't have to do this today. She says, no. She says, I told my knee yesterday, I don't care how much you hurt. If I have to, I'm going to drag you down the road. I couldn't get her to talk about it for 38 years. I got off her case, and God started working with her. And then she's always been working with God, and she's totally changed. And now she, you know what? She's 74 years old and cuter today than I've seen her in forever, it seems like. She's just cute. And the way she does her hair and her clothes, and, you know, just love it. And so, but anyway, but we're still the opposite. So every day we have a disagreement about something. Every day. I mean, not just some days, every day. And we haven't yet, but it's coming. And so we were together this morning, had a good time, but she's going to disagree at some point today. And she may, she's so good. But she is, we disagree and we irritate each other every day. There's not a day that goes by that we don't. And irritation is a very good thing because it's a form of anger. And the reason it's a good thing, how many of you are married? Just out of curiosity, okay? Lots of you? Okay, now. Or friends? How many of you have real close friends, best buddies kind of things? Okay? So, when is the last time you thanked your mate for irritating you? Any testimonies? Huh? Somebody said something. Never. Oh, there you go. See, that's not right, because irritations are a great thing, because they simply tell us what kind and how many logs we have in our own eyes, because that's why we're irritated, because they're doing something that reflects a flaw in our life. And how are you going to know it unless you have somebody around you that irritates you? And if you get married to somebody, they're going to irritate you. Why? Because you got flaws in your life. You got logs in your eyes. And so Jesus says, don't be on people's cases. Don't be judging people and pointing out their flaws and their toothpicks in their eyes. But rather, get those toothpicks out of your, get the logs out of your own eyes. Then you'll see clearly how to help them with their toothpicks. Yeah, but whoever gets to the place where you can help other people. I'm not there. I don't know anybody who's there. So I just forget it. Why bother them when I got my own? And I even will ask my kids, my grandkids, and my mate, and whoever knows me well, hey, if you see some things in my life that need to be worked on, just come right up to me and let me know. Because I like to work on stuff, and I like to learn new things. And I'll always be like that, I think, the rest of my life. So irritations are good. So the next time your mate or your friends irritate you, just walk right up to them and say, thank you so much for the way you act around me from time to time. You don't have to say you irritate me, but you can. My wife will correct me every time we're in the car because of the Whittier thing. Naturally, she'll say, you're too close to the edge. You're not thinking of passing that car, are you? I was. But now, of course, I can't now. I missed the opportunity. This is a timing thing. And so many times I've said to her, thank you very much for irritating me. Because I have such flaws in my... I used to say to my kids, thank you for being so miserable from time to time. Because you are allowing me to see my own flaws. I want to thank you for who you are, because I got flaws. My kids used to go, what'd you just say? Because it's important to tell the truth. It's your problem. So, well, like, for example, this little finger, if you look at it, you can't tell a lot of difference between these. Does it look fatter? Not very much, though. This one I cut off a year and a half ago, the end of it. It was hanging there by this little piece of skin right there. And I was doing a honeydew list in the backyard, and so I had this big power drill with the cord on it, you know, my biggest one, because I had to get it in the ground. Had this big long auger thing, you know, put that plant in, cover it up. You know. But this time it hit a rock or a root or what it was, and the thing flies out of my hand. I grab it with my left hand before it hits the ground. I grab the shaft, but somehow the button got pushed that keeps it running, and the cord went. It was like seconds. And you know, there, it wouldn't move anymore because my finger was there. And so I take my glove off, and there's my finger hanging there, and I finally got it unconnected, you know, and I ran into the house, and I grabbed a bowl out of the cupboard. I put ice in it and water, and I put a rag around my finger, put it in the water, jumped in my car, pushed a button, and said, called my wife, and I said, "Hun," I said, I just cut the end of my finger off. And she went, "Oh." Now, part of the is that she's a perfectionist. She's the personality, like the beaver personality. Anybody hear the beaver personality kind of thing? Okay. They like details and schedules, and she gets energy from routine. I get energy from change. So you can just, we don't, you know, there's not a lot of mix there. And so, and so she gets that energy from that, and I get energy from change. So anyway, so that it's part of the, was I just messed her schedule up today because she has it all worked out. When she's wanting to walk out and get the mail from the office and what staff members she's going to meet with and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, we pull into the parking lot at the exact same time, and she gets out, I get out, and she goes, and I went, and she said, "That's my favorite bowl. Do not break that bowl." And it's a pretty bowl, but it was the first one in the cupboard. I didn't go, "Let's see now, I don't know if one my wife would allow me to have it." You just grab whatever's there. And so, but that's how different we are. So how do we stay in love? How do we stay bonded? How do we stay committed? How do we stay where I really, really have affection for her? Why is that? It's because we have high honor in our home all the time. I'm always telling her how special she is. And I haven't read the list in a long, long time because I don't need to. And then she says to me every other day, which is one of her theme messages, that cow piles hit us every day. She calls it a different word. And pieces of that stuff hits us every day, doesn't it? I mean, the stinky stuff, and we step in it, and you know, and so... But she says there's always a pearl in every pile or a blessing in every pile. That's exactly what Jesus says in Matthew 5, 10, 11, and 12, especially 12. 12 is that we are to rejoice in our sufferings and our hardships and our difficulties and our persecutions. So this morning at 4 o'clock, when I was awake praying and thinking about this session today, I realized that this thing is on my back from where I used to live, Branson, where I sold a home to somebody. People sell homes all the time. And when you go to the closing, do you read all those details of everything there? And do you understand? No, I just did it, and it's never been a problem. But this time, the power company in our area said they own that land after a 1903 document they found by accident that says they own all this land near us, and all these resorts are on it and everything. And the big mall, the new mall in Branson, it's on that land. So there's lawsuits everywhere. They lost that lawsuit, but they won the one about my land. They won that one. Recent, like a month ago. And so the people who bought the home from me think that I should buy it back. And so there's a lawsuit. It's really against my title company, but they have to go through me. It's very embarrassing to go through those depositions. Oh, my gosh. Sorry, sir. I don't remember a thing about that. Sorry, sir. You know, it's just very embarrassing. But anyway, so lawyers, bless them. And so anyway, there's probably 10 of them in here. And I'm staying focused here because I have some jokes that came to my mind about lawyers. But... do you think I have a little bit of an ADHD in me? Yeah. So anyway, this morning I was thinking about that, and all of a sudden my stomach knotted up with worry. And then I relaxed and I said, wait a minute, hold it. It's the title company they're suing, not me. And so that's what the lawyer keeps telling me all the time, my lawyer. And they're paying for it too. I didn't pay a dime. And so I said, yeah, that's true. But still my stomach was kind of knotted up. And then this came to me. My father never blessed me. I never knew him. He was an angry person. But what came out of my relationship with my father was a great deal of empathy towards people who don't have good relationships with their dad or their mom. And the very book, The Blessing, that we wrote, our best-selling book, we wrote years ago, came out of the understanding of what it feels like now. So do I want to bless my kids? Absolutely. And do I? Yes. And my grandkids. And one of the best ways I bless them is this. Is I tell them all the time how valuable they are. My little granddaughter, who's 6 years old from China, she was born with a cleft lip, is that what it's called? And they sewed that back on. Cute, she's so cute. And then her fingers, some of them were missing, and some of her toes and stuff. And so they had them all cut, separated and stuff like that. But sometimes this hand's like missing most of the fingers, and this one's fine. And so I say to her a lot, I'll say, which hand does Grandpa love the most? She goes, my special hand. And I say, why? And I tell her about all the great things that are coming to her life because of that hand. And she's so athletic, and I'm sure she'll be a gymnast, you know. But she's just so precious, and she's a survivor. She's been through so many surgeries, and I tell her how wonderful she is and how valuable she is. Because what I don't want her having any of this in her heart. Anger. Stress, worry, fear, jealousy, envy. Doesn't the scripture say in Philippians 4, stop worrying. Stop stressing. Enough of this. But in everything, through thanksgiving, giving thanks, and supplication, crying out to God, let your request be made known to the Lord, and the God of peace will guard your heart. This is what I don't have in my heart anymore, is anger. Because I download it and get rid of it every day. And sometimes during the day, where the scripture says in Ephesians chapter 4, it says, go ahead and get angry. Go ahead and be angry. Just don't sin in your anger. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, otherwise you give a foothold to the enemy, Satan. And what does Satan do? He came to kill, steal, and destroy. People who get angry and stay angry. It's not getting angry. You can get angry every day. Everybody I know gets angry every day because you get frustrated, which is anger. You get hurt feelings. You get fearful. You get worried. You get all those things. But I just don't keep them. I get rid of them before the day is up. And so I forgive my wife every day. Thank God for her. I say, God, Lord, thank you so much for my wife who helps me become more like you every day. Because she's irritating. And everybody's irritating. Right? But I thank God for her. And I forgive her every day. And I say out loud as I'm falling off to sleep, Lord, thank you for Norma. And I totally and 100% forgive her because she's flawed like I am. And I'm not going to get on her case about it. And I'm certainly not going to ask her to change because that doesn't work. And I just thank you, Lord, for her. And then I get to fall asleep and wake up the next morning to the whole thing again. Like Ecclesiastes says, just love your wife during all your miserable days on this earth. But every day I have the same junk you have happen to me that happens to you. I'm in a stool because I can't stand very long on my feet. And I don't know what it's coming from. It's probably the kidney meds or whatever it is. It could be that I jogged for 45 years of my life. I don't know what it is. But the point is that today I can't do it. And that's okay. I don't get mad at God. I thank Him. And the worst thing that ever happened to me in my life was a Christian leader that I worked for back in my 30s when he hurt me so deeply and I was so mad and so upset and he robbed me and he, I went through the whole list of junk. How many of you had somebody that, in some situation in your life that beat you up? Let's see, okay? Most of us, okay? When's the last time you cheered because those things happened to you? That's what it says. It says rejoice. Again, I say to you, rejoice. Pray without ceasing. Give God thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus. Rejoice means cheering. I looked that up. I really studied it to say, well, if I'm supposed to do this in the middle. So this morning at 4 o'clock, this lawsuit thing, I'm saying, yay! This morning. Norman didn't hear me because I said it under my breath. Yay! I could have waited until the loud air conditioner turned on and I could have said it out loud then. But I didn't. I haven't even thanked God for the air conditioner yet or cheered. Anything that's negative happening to you, you can cheer. Because my dad's negativity that happened to me that caused me to be angry at him and this boss that hurt my feelings so deeply. And I was so mad. Just think of the people in your church that frustrate you and irritate you and cause you to be upset and makes life difficult. You can do this if you want every day. You just can't keep it. Because if you do, you go into darkness and you can't know God's love and you can't know His power of His Holy Spirit. Because if you don't forgive, He can't forgive you. And so I just realized that every day I'm going to get some of this smelly stuff on me. And my wife was helping this one gal that she just caught her husband online with videos of himself and her. One of them was Russian, one of them was Chicago. And two girls that he was talking to regularly and they were undressing and doing all kinds of sexual things. And she caught him. And it just killed her. So she comes to my wife and asks, what am I going to do? My wife said, hey, the bottom line is you're angry and you're going to get over this. You can go ahead and grieve, you know, for whatever long it takes. But eventually you're going to have to thank God for this trial. And she said, you've got to start looking immediately for the pearls, for the blessings of God giving you. There are always blessings and there are always pearls in whatever bothers you. They're there. You just have to start looking for them. Sometimes you can find them in a day. Sometimes you can find them in a week. Sometimes a month. Sometimes a year. Whatever. It doesn't matter to me how long it takes. Because I start cheering knowing those things are there. By faith. They always come. And the guy who really, really hurt me. And it took me 2 years to forgive him. I went to Waco, Texas away from him. And went to Waco, Texas to just grieve and suffer and feel bad for myself. But all the time I knew that Scripture said to me I had to forgive him. And so I asked God to teach me how to forgive. And eventually, after 2 years, about 2 years, to learn how to forgive him. And I finally did. And so the ashes just burned me during that whole time. And I finally forgave him. And then there were just ashes. And out of those ashes grew all the things God let me do in life. So, I don't I know that some of these things that are happening to you and have happened to you are really bad, but in the middle of them, just whisper this, yay! And to help you remember it, let's think of, can everybody think of at least one thing that's really bugged you in your life, or even today is bugging you? It'd be better if it was today. All of you can? Okay. Think of that thing, and then together, let's all do this. Yay! Come on, let's enthusiasm. Yay! All day long you can do that. Because it's very valuable to do. Because He promises to bless you and to give you those, well, He causes all things to work together for good to those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. Yay! And even when I can't see the blessing and can't see this thing, I know it's there. I will see it eventually. If I don't ever see it on this earth, I'll see it when I get to heaven. I say, God, I never could figure out how I was blessed for that. And then He'll explain it. So, it's 11. And so, I was going to share one more thing or take questions or whatever. I have time. How long do I actually have?
About 20 after.
20 after.
You can open up for questions.
Okay, good. All right, this is another really big thing in my life. When I was a teenager, my pastor in Lakewood, California, First Baptist Church of Lakewood, I think it's called. Well, I was talking to him one day, what am I going to do in the future? He said, young man, he said, do you want to work on machines and build machines and or do you want to work on people and help people in their lives? And I said, machines, people, my personnel, I said, people. He said, that's what you need to do. He says, so there's five things I want you to think about. Five things I want you to do if you're going to work on people. He said, number one, I want you to decide, make a definite 100% commitment as who's the master of your life. Master. It's five M's. Master, okay? Jesus is the master of my life. So I'm going to obey what He said. Second, what is God? What is Jesus' purpose for you? What's your mission in life going to be? You're serving Him. He's your master. So what's your mission going to be? So I didn't know what it was going to be. So I said, I'll pray about that and ask God. Third, well, here, I'll just go through my life. First one, Jesus is my master. I prayed for a lot of years until it was finally very obvious that God wanted me to help marriages and families. I just felt it in my gut. And it was confirmed when three separate people from our church came that didn't know that each other existed, knocked on my door, and I answered the door and they said, we're very embarrassed to be here, but God like overwhelmed us. It was husband and wife in every case. And he said to us that you're going to be, Isaiah 61, you're going to rebuild the broken walls of marriages and families. And I said, okay. But three of them came. And then shortly after that, I went out to lunch with the chairman of our board, at the church board. And he said to me, what have you been thinking about? And I said, well, I've been thinking about somehow ministering to marriages and families the rest of my life. And I don't know exactly how to do it or how to do it or when to do it. I just feel a little peace about it. He said, that is amazing. Because God last week laid on my heart to start giving to somebody who's in the marriage and family ministry. He said, so you'll be the person I give to. And he had this big real estate company in Waco, Texas. And so I said, wow. But he's chairman of the board. So I thought, ooh. And then I thought, ooh. You know, he's going to take this to the church and they're going to probably fire me or whatever. But he was excited. So they sent me as a missionary to marriages and family and supported me. And then a couple of doctors said they wanted to help support and stuff like that. And so that's where I was going. So that was my mission. So master, my mission was to help marriages and family. So whatever your mission is, whatever God's called you to do. Three, the third M is method. What methods are you going to use to do this ministry? And so Dr. Henry Brandt came into my life. I got invited to speak at a marriage conference in the Virgin Islands. I didn't even know how these people knew I existed because I just had this calling anyway. So I go to speak and I go with Henry Brandt And if anybody ever remember Dr. Henry Brandt? Well, you do? Well, he was an awesome speaker. And so every time he'd speak every day first, he'd speak like at 10, I'd speak at 11, and they'd give him a standing ovation, everybody roar with laughter. I'd get up and speak, and they weren't sure what I was trying to say. And they'd come up afterwards, and I could, your outline, show us your outline, because I was very embarrassed. And the whole time he was saying to me, if you really want to do this and you feel God's called you to do this, then I want you to know I'll meet with you every afternoon and mentor you on this. I said, great. He said, Gary, if you want to do this, there's five methods I've used my whole life to minister to marriages and families. And he says, you can live your whole life with these five methods, and they really work. So I was all ears. So I said, what are they? He said, you've got to have a book. You've got to write a book about what you're learning, about how you're helping. You have to write the book about what you're learning. And I laughed inside. I can't. I mean, I knew I couldn't write a book, first of all. My educational background. And I never took a book home until I was a senior in high school. And I was never planning to go to school. And I went my first, he talked me into, my boss at Hughes Aircraft in Fullerton talked me into going to college, and he would pay my way if I went. And I thought, whoa, full ride scholarship. You know what my tuition was a semester? $8. That's what they charged back in the dark ages, okay? And so my books were like 12 or whatever they were, and so I paid $20 a semester, and he paid it. Thank you so much. And I wish I could find him to thank him. But anyway, so I did. But after three semesters, my grade point average was 1.4. Or in that area. I know it was 1 point something. And so I got a letter from City College saying, Dear Mr. Smalley, you know, thank you for being a student here. But unless you get a 2.0 at the end of your second semester, you can't come back. And so I had to get I had 6 points there I had to make up, and somehow a kindergarten teacher tutored me, and so because I was terrible at spelling and math and reading, couldn't read hardly anything, and so I actually tested out on the sixth grade level. So, and I'm still there on reading and spelling and writing. And so 65 books later, that's where I am today. So that, let's see, when should I say this? I'll say it now. Guess what books sell the best around the world? Books that are written on the sixth grade level. All the government forms that they write to, like the FBI and the CIA and all those documents they have to write for to training, all on the sixth grade level. And so I'm there naturally. So I didn't have to do anything to get that one done. And so when I get books back from ghostwriters and editors and stuff like that, it's usually upped a little. And so if I don't understand the words they're using, then I change it. And so my job really is to do the first draft, usually by tape recorder or with the Dragon 12.0. And then I get it back from ghostwriters and editors and stuff like that. And my job is usually just dumbing it down to the secret level, which is really dumbing it down so I like the book. I got to be interested at the end of the chapter. I'm doing novels right now with Dan Walsh. I did with Karen Kingsbury. And so, anybody ever read any of Karen Kingsbury's novels? Okay, what is it called? The Redemption series, I think it's called. Did you read any of those? Do you know all I really did for Karen? Because she's so brilliant. It's amazing how good she is. I cut the first 50 pages out of her books. Because she didn't have anything on the top 100 list. Because the first 50 pages were boring to a sixth grader. And so I couldn't get into it. This is really complicated and boring. She was trying to get the people to get involved in I said, no, cut those things. And so we did. And all of a sudden, now she's one of the best writers in the country. She's brilliant. So she got everything just like that. Well, That's what I do with my books. I'm on a current thing right now with Dan Walsh. Just read the last couple of chapters. It's not finished yet, but it's called the Prodigal. I think it's called The Legacy now, but we want to go back to The Prodigal because the publishers, you know. And so, for publishers. So anyway, but that's really what I do, okay? So all the five things were impossible, but here's what I want to leave you with. I knew I couldn't do them, but I knew that all things were possible through Christ who strengthens us. And if His words abide in us and live within us, He says, I'll abide with you and my Father will abide with you, but also you can ask whatever you want and I'm going to do it for you. So as on a sixth grade level, graduated from seminary, just barely. The way I graduated is I got to know the professors really well. And we became great friends because there was a purpose behind that. It's because when I got really close to him and I'd take a test, they go, oh, he really knows what that is, you know. Hey, that's amazing. When you're not a good student, you learn whatever you have to, you know, to get through this stuff because I used to hate that stuff. And anyway, so every day, somebody taught me how to pray. And it's in Luke 11 and Luke 18. The essence of it is that I never get out of line with God when I get into line. But I never do. I never pray for things that are inconsistent with 1 Timothy 6:3. It has to line up with 1 Timothy 6:3. Is it consistent with what Jesus taught? And will it actually lead to godliness? If it does that, and I have peace about it and think it's from God, then I test the waters, and then I get counsel from people, then I go for it. And what I do is I wake up in the morning and I say, oh, today's the day. I wake up like this. Today's the day that this is going to happen. Today. And so I start looking for it first thing in the morning that it's going to happen. So like, for example, he said write a book. I mean, can you imagine me writing a book? No. It's impossible. And so I wake up every day and say, I didn't get a chance to write a book yesterday, God, but today's the day. And so one day I got a call from a guy in Philadelphia that I had met one time. And he said, I was just thinking about you. I know you're in marriage and family. And I'm wondering, would you like to write two books? And we'll fund it. And we'll get Pat and Shirley Boone, that's back in the good old days, Pat and Shirley Boone to advertise this on national television. It'll be a 2-minute commercial. I said, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, it was literally hell on earth writing two books because we had to have them done in 8 weeks. Yeah. I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. And then when the books finally came in the mail, I wasn't involved in the cover design. And the original cover designs, if only he knew them for better for best. And the original cover designs looked like third grade health books. They were so horrible and stupid and ugly. And I actually went to a movie theater and sat in the back by myself and cried. And I said to God, Lord, you did all this miraculous stuff. And then you let the covers go like this? Okay. Yay! Because he turned it into amazing stuff. So each of those things happened. Henry Brandt said, you have to have 10 messages. And God gave me 20. And he said, you can live your whole life on those 20 messages with marriage and family. And so out of those messages grew, well, all my books were my own failures, my marriage failures and my parenting failures, and how God's taught me how to stay in harmony with my wife. And see, he gave me the best wife because she's just the opposite. Try staying in harmony with her. See? So it takes time. And I had to figure it out and to get it done and get some real complicated psychological thing or biblical thing and try to work it out and whatever it was. And so anyway, and the movies came just the same way. I mean, how did that happen? I don't know. It was supernatural. But every day I woke up and all day long I cried out to him and thanked him ahead of time. I used to ask my kids, we'd go to a bookstore when they were little. I'd say, okay, $10. I'll give you $10 for every book you find in this bookstore of mine. They'd go in there and run everywhere and come back and say, not one. I'd say, yeah, they must be all sold out. I didn't have a book. You know, then we'd high five and stuff. But that's exactly what if you have faith like a mustard seed, you can say to that mountain, be removed and cast in the sea. And if you pray believing that it has already happened, it's yours. Great promise from Jesus. So that's what I did. And all five of them became reality within 2 years. But I never get out of line. As I said, 73 years old today, and I'm still in line today on key things. I'm writing a new, I'm going to end with this. I'm writing a new book right now, and my whole family has agreed to help me. So all my 18 of us, my kids and their mates, and all the 10 grandkids, it's a love letter book. It's a love book to the next four or five generations of Smalleys and Gibsons. My daughter's married to a Gibson. It's a love letter of what we did as a family to stay in harmony. And there's seven pillars of this thing. And we still do them. And they've all agreed. They're going to make a pledge to continue this. And we figure out exactly how to make it work. And then it's going to be put in a book. And then it's going to go to our relatives for the next four, five, six generations. I'm praying for that every day. I wake up every morning. I can hardly wait because certain things have to happen. And I know it will. And if it doesn't, I always say to God, I'll do it in heaven. But he's always been very faithful. So the essence of this is that this is the most important thing I do. I honor people and I honor God's creation. And I keep this as low as possible. I cheer when I don't feel like it. I don't ever feel like cheering. But I do it out of obedience to him. Because he's the one that says, I'll give you blessings and cause it all things to work together for good to those who love him. And this one is Saturday morning. I just have it in the bag. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Yeah.